Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 10th, 2023 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Intergovernmental Relations Committee. This meeting is also being conducted via live teleconference for public access. The time is 3:40. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information about the meeting.
Good afternoon, this is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask participants to please mute your telephone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good afternoon. This is Corinne Myers speaking. This meeting is being held in person in keeping with the Open Space Act. Additional telephonic access being provided for the benefit of the public. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view this afternoon's agenda and information on each of the actions being taken. In the event the teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect. Chairman of the Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Commissioner McAllister, will preside this afternoon. Commissioners and staff, please state your name prior to speaking each and every time for the benefit of those listening in by telephone. And telephone participants, please mute your phone. With that, I will invite Committee Chairman McAllister to please call the meeting to order.
Thank you very much. This is Chairman McAllister calling the meeting to order. The time is 3:41. I'm going to ask Carol to conduct a roll call of attendance.
Commissioner McAllister?
Here.
Commissioner Thorson?
Here.
Commissioner Designee Craven?
Here.
Commissioner Pryor?
Here.
And of course.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have the first item on the agenda. It's a review and discussion of Rhode Island Housing's 2023 state and legislative priorities. Amy.
Thank you, Chairman. Amy Raynon, presenting the state and federal legislative priorities. We're currently tracking at the General Assembly about 280 bills, although bills still continuing to be introduced. As you may have heard, there are a large number of bills dealing with housing and land use, including a package of 14 bills that the Speaker introduced in March. And as an attachment, you have a highlights of many of the key bills in that package. That package, as well as the other areas, broken up by issue areas that we're tracking. You go to the electronic version of to the bills themselves. But on housing, in terms of our bills that we are testifying on, we really limit our testimony to high priority bills, direct impact on Rhode Island housing and our ability to achieve our mission that have a reasonable chance of moving forward. We also work individually one-on-one with sponsors of bills that have been introduced to talk to them about potential challenges with the bill language or ways to strengthen those bills. We're also continuing to participate on the House Low and Moderate Income Housing Commission and the Land Use Commission. Their work has been extended through June of 2025. I'm just going to go over and give a high-level overview because there are so many bills in a few different issue areas here, but if you have specific questions about any of the bills in the highlight, attachment, or that I'm touching on, please feel free to ask questions.
I have a question.
Yeah?
I didn't think consolidate some of these into a... Well, never mind.
So the governor's budget, as you may know, included an additional $30 million in SFRF dollars for homeless infrastructure. It also moves forward the fiscal years in which those SFRF appropriations are available and removes the cap on the down payment system. On legislation, There's one bill that we asked to have introduced, which deals with the foreclosure mediation statute. Currently, there are foreclosure mediation protections for homeowners who are at risk of losing their home to foreclosure. Those protections sunset on July 1st. So this legislation basically just eliminates that sunset, so existing foreclosure mediation protections will continue. We're also always keeping an eye on legislation that's introduced that would impact the 8% tax. That's a tax that is charged on affordable rental housing. There are quite a number of bills dealing with ways to incentivize housing development or remove barriers to housing development, including the bills in the speaker's package. Some of the things that those bills do are basically streamlining the development permit review and appeals process and makes it sort of by right uses for a lot of different kinds of things like accessory dwelling units, conversion of commercial to residential, and transit-oriented development. The LOMOD Housing Act, there are a number of bills that have been introduced, as there are most years, that would basically make it easier for municipalities to hit the 10% goal without necessarily doing anything. We have testified in the past and did again this year in opposition to several of those bills. There are also a number of bills that have been introduced that deal with renewable energy and climate change. So bills that basically try to speed a transition to residential building standards that are more sort of towards electrification versus fossil fuels, or promoting utilization of solar and renewable energy in residential development. There are several bills that have been introduced around hazard remediation, both around the replacement of lead pipes and as well as bills to strengthen the existing state lead laws. Some bills have been introduced around promoting minority business enterprises, increasing requirements for MBE participation in construction projects, a bunch of bills around landlord-tenant relationships, things that cap rents, that cap application fees or eliminate application fees, and limit the documents that you can consider when you're making a decision around renting to a tenant. And finally, there are a few others that don't fit into those categories, one of which is legislation that's been introduced to make changes to Rebuild Rhode Island and the State Historic Tax Credit Program to clarify that some changes made last year to require prevailing wage for larger projects not go into effect for applications that were submitted to those programs prior to January 1st, 2023. That's a change that impacts several of our affordable housing projects that are moving their way through the process.
It was on the front page of the paper today.
Yes, indeed it was. Before I move on to the federal section, do folks have any questions around the state bills?
Amy, I like the setup that you have where I can just click right on the bill, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to get that going, but I find it very helpful. And remember when we started, we had the long spreadsheets that
yeah.
was out and couldn't really pull them up.
Yeah. You know, so this is like wallpaper.
Yeah.
Well, I have to recognize that you're the time I've been most of you have met before, helping me out on the ledge side, went through and created that document, and I know that is a challenging, so thank you.
Two other questions on here.
Yeah. Oh, great.
Sure, is that okay? Yep, yeah, go ahead. Stephen Fire. Amy, on the foreclosure mediation, first, could you just give us a quickest reminder of what's contained within the mediation measure? And the second thing I'm just wondering is how receptive have folks been in the general public so far?
Yep, so the foreclosure mediation law was put in place about 10 years ago, requires lenders to provide the opportunity for an independent mediation process to any homeowner who is falling behind on their mortgage payments prior to that lender initiating a foreclosure process. Currently, it's basically the mediator could be any HUD-approved housing counselor, but in reality, Rhode Island Housing is the only entity that has stepped forward to do that, so we have been doing that for the history of the program. We have a low pickup rate, and so a lot of people get noticed about this. A much lower percentage actually choose to participate in mediation, but of those who participate in mediation, we have a very high good response rate out of that. So only 25% of cases that go to mediation result in a homeowner losing their home to foreclosure. So that's pretty good.
Necessity of extending that. Do you seek that every year?
No. So the it has had a series of sunsets built in. So when it was originally went into effect, it's been in effect for 10 years, but I think the first sunset was 5 years, and then there was another extension of the sunset. We are looking to eliminate the sunset. It's been happening for 10 years. It is part of the system. The Mortgage Bankers Association, I believe, may be actually supporting the bill this year. The Bankers Association, these are the two organizations that in the past have had some concerns. My understanding is that the Bankers Association is not commenting on the bill at all this year.
Got it. And I know you can't characterize potential outcomes of the General Assembly, no one can, but how has the receptivity been so far in the conversation with legislation?
I have not heard any pushback on the legislation at all. Quite frankly, the largest challenge is getting lost in the shuffle. It's a very small bill, but an important issue, and if it is not passed, those protections will go away. So I think the largest issue is just making sure it stays on their screen and gets heard and moves forward.
Very good. Thank
you. Yep.
Amy, this is Rob Craven. About how many times, or how many mediations does Rhode Island have to do with?
I can send you that. It changes, like particularly during COVID, the numbers were way down because the federal government put in place moratoriums on foreclosures and stuff like that. So, you know, we had a much higher level. It changed over time. So when it originally went into effect, it was during the Great Recession. So you had a very high level at that point because we were seeing a lot of foreclosure activity. So it had high utilization then. That gradually went down a little bit as we came out of the Great Recession. Really plummeted during the COVID years because of the federal protections. Those protections have largely gone away at this point. So we do anticipate those numbers to be rising as we sort of back to normal kind of situation.
And do you have a sense of why this was not done in the past? Was it just due to the nature of the opposition to the bill from private enterprise, or was there another reason for the sunset being there?
It was a new thing. So oftentimes at the General Assembly, when you see a new process being put into place, you see a sunset. So I think it was a new process, but it's been 10 years. And as with many things with lenders, it becomes part of the process. It becomes, you know, built into their costs and their process for foreclosure at this point.
Thank you.
Okay. Do the feds?
Okay. And before I move on to the feds, I do want to note, and I'll email this around to folks, we are having our annual meet and greet up at the State House on the 18th, which is next week. And just wanted to let everybody know we'd love to have you if you're interested in coming. It's going to be from 3 to 4:30 with a speaking program around, we're nailing it down now, but around 3:15 to 3:30. Secretary Pryor, we're very happy to hear, is going to be joining us, as well as the governor and possibly the Senate president and the speaker. We're just getting final confirmation from them. It's our 50th anniversary, so we'll also be featuring some of the developments that received funding through that first round of SFRF awards. Those developers are going to be there. So we'd love to have folks. I'll pass it around if folks want to grab one, but love to have you see you up there. With that, I will turn to the federal legislative priorities. We just returned.
I feel very strongly that folks could really be socialized on the plan, capital plan. I'm really anxious that gets socialized as broadly as possible. I've spoken to Stefan about it as well. This is vitally important for the Americans. It's been for a while. You know, we have this little tiny voice that talks about our successes, and there's a big outside voice that suggests how much is needed. But really, there really has not been, in my estimation, sufficient touting of the accomplishments of this organization. And, you know, a lot of it is summarized here, but the five-year plan is not just based on pie in the sky. It's based on actual results that have been delivered. I think that message needs to be socialized more broadly. And this is an opportunity to do that. If I can go, I will go.
We hope to see you there.
Well, if I can go, I will go. And there's no beer, though, right?
There are refreshments, but not that kind of refreshment.
But so I just want to make that comment because to me, that's a real tool for being able to, you know, build more confidence in the confidence of folks to really tackle the issues that's ahead of us.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, this is Amy Rendon again. Just heading into the federal legislative priorities. We just returned, Carol, James, and I just returned from our annual legislative conference in D.C. We were able to meet with the members of the delegation. This is the one-pager that we handed them, but there is a QR code here. If you want to get the in-depth version, you can scan that, and it will give you even more detail. The backside of that document is our legislative priorities. One of our top legislative priorities this year, federal level, deals with the low-income housing tax credit. Really two elements to that. One is to restore a 12.5% housing credit boost that we had that expired in 2021. Even just getting back to what we had previously would make a huge difference in terms of our ability to finance the production and preservation of more affordable housing. In addition to that, federal legislation has been introduced in past years and is soon to be introduced again in this Congress that would significantly expand the low-income housing tax credit and lower the mortgage bond, revenue bond threshold from 50% to 25%. Both of those would really allow us to do a lot more in terms of production and preservation. So we encourage the delegation to sign on to those bills. Another top priority for us right now deals with performance-based contract administration. As you may know, the HUD currently contracts with us to oversee the Section 8 developments in the state, and there has been a long-running legal battle around efforts that HUD has made in past years to rebid those contracts and allow for regionalization of out-of-state entities to serve in that role, which we oppose. Senator Reid has really taken a leadership role. We owe him a lot to step in and get language in the appropriations bill last year, which prevented HUD from moving forward with a regionalized version of performance-based contract administration. We are continuing to work with his office and the rest of the delegation on a long-term solution, either through authorizing or appropriating legislation. The third priority is around risk share federal financing bank. We've used HUD's risk share mortgage insurance for many years, but during the Great Recession, when the bond markets were sort of turned upside down, the federal government stepped forward with financing through the Federal Financing Bank, which coupled with risk share really allowed us to offer very attractive preservation financing in-state. That tool was allowed to expire under the Trump administration. The Biden administration has reactivated it. However, their goal is to transition out of it to a Ginny Mae securitization tool by 2016. This is a very weedy 2026, sorry. This is a very in the weeds kind of thing, but the bottom line is that the FFB tool works really well for us because we're allowed to keep those mortgages on our books. So we have the long-term revenue that those generate. If we move to a Ginnie Mae platform, we would be selling those mortgages. So we would get some upfront fees, but we wouldn't have that long-term asset that generates the kind of financing we use for down payment assistance and gap financing for development and all kinds of things. So we asked the federal delegation to help us keep FSC if we can, and if there is going to have to be some kind of a transition to a different tool to make it as much like FSC as possible. And then finally, appropriations. There are a number of federal programs listed here that are particularly helpful tools for us in creating and preserving affordable housing as well as increasing accessibility of housing to low-income folks. So we always have very strong support from the delegation, but we spoke with them about that as well. I'm happy to answer any questions.
If I could ask something, you mentioned that Senator Reid was our champion with respect to PBCA, but Amy was a tremendous help on this, and she's been recognized nationally by other HSAs for policy work associated with this, as has Mikey Carroll from our management group. Great work.
Thank you.
Any questions? Yeah, go ahead. Thank you, Chairman. Stephan, Amy, are there any of the potential programmatic expansions that seem more promising this year, and maybe merit us putting our oomph into?
The biggest challenge with the low-income housing tax credit would be huge if it could move forward. The biggest challenge is a vehicle. So for the last couple of years, usually at the end of the calendar year, there's a tax credit extender package where lots of different kinds of credits, I'm sure you dealt with them at Commerce as well, get reauthorized. Last couple of years, those have been bogged down by larger discussions. So the best bet for us, I think, at the federal level for the Affordable Credit Improvement Act, the tax credit stuff, is if there is a tax extender bill, and usually that's where you would get that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it can be really challenging to do things that involve tax credits if they're not part of that particular kind of vehicle. The PBCA thing is very important to us as an agency and to those developments, but is not as much in the production, production side of things. And the risk share stuff is a little longer term because there's going to be a transition on that front. So I think that the biggest is low-income housing tax credit. We're a little bit of though challenged to find the right vehicle for it, I think.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right. I believe that is all we have on the agenda here. No votes need to be taken at this time. So I will take a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Jim Corson.
Second.
Moved and second. Spring, you get out of this?
Certainly. All those in favor of adjourning the screen say aye.
Aye.
Say nay.
Thank you. Either you can stop recording.